morning, members. I'll call this meeting of State Government Finance and Elections to order for today, April 7th, 2021. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. And Ms. Spreck, will you take the roll?
Chair Nelson?
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Carlson, present.
Representative Nash?
Nash, present.
Representative Bonner? Representative Draskowski?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Cleavorn?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason? Representative New Brindley?
Present.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Spreck. And now we have the minutes, and it's been pointed out there was an error in the minutes as they were posted. Representative Quam was driving up and missed the vote, and so he should be listed as being, I think Representative Quam, you wanted to be listed as abstaining?
Excused.
So just, and with that change in the minutes, Representative Elkins, do you want to approve the minutes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, I'd make that motion to approve the minutes from yesterday with the change on Representative Quam.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Motion's been made to approve the minutes as corrected from April 6th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And all opposed? Minutes have been approved. All members, we're going to revert back to House File 1952. It has public testimony on the bill. And we'll start with Commissioner Doty, who there were some questions that were for him, and he happened to drop off before we could ask questions. So Representative or Commissioner Doty, welcome back to the committee if you want to identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Robert Doty, and I'm the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
And I believe Representative New Brindley had a question for him, and I think it was Kosnick that had a question for him from yesterday. Representative New Brindley, do you want to ask your question of Commissioner Doty?
Yeah, the commissioner went over, you know, the problems with the discrepancy in funding from the governor's budget, and I was just curious to know if the department would likely need to lay anyone off if they do not get that funding that was requested.
Commissioner Doty.
Mr. Chair, committee, I would say given the nature of, given the amount of that discrepancy, we likely would not have to lay people off as a result of that. What we would do, though, is we would have to reposition and kind of reprioritize. So we would reposition our current staff to do more high priority work, which would then, of course, result in unfinished work. It would result in delays, response times, and things like that as a result of how we interact with our customers. So, but overall, no, we would not have to probably lay staff off. The thing that is important to note, though, is that the governor's recommendation for appropriation really is would allow the department to maintain its current staff, current service levels. And that's really important for what Minnesotans have been demanding of us.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you.
And Representative Kosnick, were you the other one that had a question?
Yeah. Yeah, they covered my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Any further questions for Commissioner Doty? If not, thank you, Commissioner. And if you hang around, maybe more questions will come before we get on to the voting on the bill.
Thank you.
The next person I have on my list is Commissioner Showalter from MMB. Commissioner Showalter, if you want to give your testimony, identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter. Good morning. I am Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. I appreciate the chance to testify before you today. My testimony is regarding the House State Government Omnibus Bill, and as you know, MMB is inside this bill, and our agency is there to serve all Minnesotans by working to ensure that state government is effective and transparent, fair, innovative, and always striving to improve. We're pleased to see several initiatives in the governor's budget are reflected in this bill. Overall, I just want to thank you, because one of the key things here is recognizing contributions of state employees. Over the past year, state employees have worked tirelessly to serve Minnesotans. We're pleased that the House bill takes the governor's recommendation to increase the operating budgets of state agencies. This funding provides agencies the necessary funding for projected growth in employee compensation and rising IT costs. And additionally, these funds will allow agencies to maintain current operations and ensure there's not reductions in services. There are a number of initiatives and specific items in the bill. I just want to call out and for comment. One is establishing Payment Plus. The bill includes a proposal to establish Payment Plus, which is a rebate program that allows vendors to receive payments through the virtual credit card and provides a rebate savings to the state. Payment Plus is anticipated to generate more than $500,000 annually in the general fund and illustrates our agency and our state government's commitment to identify innovative savings. Ensuring resources for the single audit, again, another great move. The bill recognizes the critical importance of the single audit to get federal funds, and it transfers, although it transfers responsibilities from the OLA, it allows the MMB to have an appropriation to contract with another auditor. One thing I do want to call out is that this bill does not have a corresponding reduction to the OLA's budget, and there is a concern with that, and here it is. Currently, the OLA bills state agencies through the statewide cost allocation plan for audits performed. Without reducing the OLA's budget, we assume the OLA will continue to utilize these resources to conduct new audits of state agencies that are neither contemplated nor budgeted for. So accordingly, with the ability to charge agency for audits, it will increase the costs allocated to state agencies that are subject to these new audits. To protect agencies from incurring unanticipated audit costs, we'd like to see that budget reduction, but you should know either way of the impact of this decision on state agency budgets across the board. Providing flexibility in providing the high deductible health plan, the bill also has a provision that allows MMB the flexibility in offering high deductible health plan. With this change, MMB has the option rather than the mandate to provide such a plan. That flexibility is important and allows us to focus on higher priority projects, like producing better employee resources to allow members to choose the most cost-effective options, work on programs to improve the health of members, and innovate around contracts. It includes repealing the gain-sharing program. We appreciate the inclusion of the language to attempt the repeal of the gain-sharing statute. Without resources for the standalone profit-sharing type program envisioned by the statute, MMB simply cannot meet this standard statutory requirement, and we agree that it's time to finally eliminate this program. Repealing the interagency transfer report, again, appreciate the inclusion of this recommendation. This is good government measure and reduces duplicative work without reducing access to information. Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'll be following up with a letter to you and the committee that provides additional details regarding our positions. But core to this is I just look forward to working with you in the coming weeks to develop a bill that serves the people of Minnesota. Appreciate the chance to testify. Appreciate the work of the committee. Thank you.
And I see we have a few questions here. Representative Quam, is your question for the commissioner?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam, go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm a little bit confused in that those audits, basically federal funding comes as a certain amount of the federal funding that's for the administration. And part of that administration is there's always the requirement of appropriate oversight and auditing of the execution. So therefore, there's always been funding to cover the audits, but that funding has always gone straight to the agencies as part of that administration fee. And so are you saying that there's an additional cost that wasn't accrued before? And is that because the legislative auditor performed that function and was being paid for it by the legislature?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. And I will try to walk us through it, but certainly I think this the point here is a subtle one, which is that the activity for that federal audit, the single audit report, is charged back to agencies, and so that is a cost that's sort of reflected against the agency budgets. And the audit work that the OLA does will be a charge back to the agencies. And so by funding both the audit work of the single audit and increasing the audit charges of the OLA, you end up creating two opportunities for indirect costs or charges against state agency activities. That's kind of my simplest way of getting at it. Happy to provide kind of a more numerical representation of it, but that's really the crux of it, is that by increasing the level of audits, we are also going to be increasing the level of charges to agency programs.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I eagerly anticipate the numerical explanation, since this would be commingling of general and non-general funds, and that delineation would be shown when you actually, provide that information. The other is, I think that there must have been some misspeak in regards to the gain sharing, because having been on this committee for years and participated in discussions on the gain sharing and the fact that the legislative auditor also seemed to indicate that gain sharing was never actually initiated, activated. It wasn't a gain sharing program within the agency, and therefore you're not getting rid of a gain sharing program. You're just discontinuing something that was used and called that, but wasn't meeting the requirement in legislation. And with that, I'll let the next person in line go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Nash, you were the next person I had on my list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the commissioner. Commissioner, did you have conversations with Auditor Nobles about this change that is being proposed? Because I respect his work tremendously and think that he runs a fantastic shop, and would like to hear more about the conversations that you had with him regarding this. And then I'll have a follow-up.
Sure. Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate the question, because I too respect the legislative auditor's work and the work of his entire office. You know, it's a really important partnership. I feel like the OLA does a lot of the checking and balancing that MMB tries to do as well. We do it from different perspectives, but at the end of the day, you know, it is important to me, and I think it's important to our agency, that we have a good relationship and that we sustain that relationship. So all that is saying, yes, the legislative auditor and I talked early on when he indicated a desire to change the funding mechanism for the single audits. And there's a number of different issues that were raised at the time. Capacity to do the single audit was part of it. We understood that and respectfully tried to figure out how do we then move forward, because we know that the state needs to perform a single audit to continue getting the federal funds.
Representative Nash.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, to be clear in a yes or no answer, those funds were actually never received by the OLA, though, were they? They were received by the administration?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, so what happens is, and this predates even me, the mechanism was set up basically for direct appropriation by the legislature to the OLA. Yep. so that the control point of how much money goes to the OLA is in the hands of the appropriators as a natural decision, but that the resources for that appropriation were coming back into the general fund as a non-dedicated revenue through charges at MMB. So what happens is that the OLA doesn't see the revenue showing up on their books. Yep, that's correct, because it's showing up on your books in the fund balances that your fiscal staff provide.
Ms. Roberts, maybe you can shed some light on this. I know we've had some discussions about this. I don't want to pull you in the middle of this, but...
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I'm also staffing Legacy, and they're doing a money amendment right now, so I'm only listening with one ear. Could you repeat the question?
It has to do with how the money is tracked for the single audit and how and where the money goes and the discussion about that, how the money is tracked in the on the budget. And
Mr. Chair, members, so in general, the Office of the Legislative Auditor is funded through a general fund appropriation. Those costs are recovered by the general fund through what we call the statewide cost allocation process. So agencies are paying for the cost of the single audit through their federal funds. They also pay for any other non-general fund costs from the legislative auditor's audits, as well as a variety of other general state expenses that are paid for by the general fund, but the services are provided to the non-general fund. So what I think is relevant for this committee is that we pay for the OLA through the general fund appropriation, but we also track what's called the indirect cost receipts line. And you'll see that on my spreadsheet, and that's where the reimbursement to the general fund comes in. So the agencies that are paying for the single audit through their federal funds, it comes back to the general fund, and we track that in the state government finance bill as a revenue to the general fund or a receipt to the general fund. So that's the basic structure. And again, I apologize that I haven't been able to pay attention to both discussions that well. So if there's a follow-up, please let me know.
Okay, Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll let that one go because I don't want to encumber Ms. Roberts. But my last comment is this.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts.
About the gain sharing comment that's been made by the commissioner. It isn't that they can't perform this. It's that they choose not to. And we battled this when we were last in the majority, and Mr. Chair, you were on the committee, and we fought about it. It's not that they can't do the work. They chose the time to find an easier way to reward employees under the conversation of this being gain sharing. And if you read the OLA report, you'll find quite clearly that what we're seeing right now is a game of three-card Monte to distract people from looking at the real reality of the gain sharing program, that it was an absolute failure because of the leadership of the administrations and the nepotistic payouts that were made under the guise of gain sharing. And then when caught with the hand in the cookie jar, hands went up and said, oh, well, we can't do this. And we should probably get rid of this because it's so cumbersome. It's so difficult to track, you know, improvements. So, yes, I completely understand the motivation, but the reality is it's not that they can't do it. They just choose not to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. The next person I have is Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, I think, was going down the path of discussion or thought that I am interested in as well. Commissioner, as I remember, the gain-sharing provision was passed in 2011 as part of the budget back then. I don't remember what the implementation date was supposed to be, 2012, I'm guessing, or 2013 at the latest. Do you have any evidence that either of the two Democrat administrations, Governor Dayton or Governor Walz, has actually followed the law and implemented gain sharing the way they were directed by law?
Commissioner Schultz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're absolutely right. And I was thinking as Representative Nash was commenting, is like, I was there. I was commissioner back when the program was initially started. So appreciate the question, Representative Drazkowski. Yes, we looked at into how to implement it in those initial years. And I know that we continue to look at it, but I think there are some there have been back and forth in legislative sessions about whether there are changes that might work, whether we're getting to the same place through other programs, or whether implementing it might create other, basically, conflicts in our authority and responsibilities that have led us to this kind of standoff of how do we do this? So, yes, Representative Drazkowski, we have looked at implementing it. I know that was true in the Dayton administration. I know as we looked at this initiative, we talked about it in the Walz and Flanagan administration. At this point, we're flummoxed as to how to move it forward, given the conflicting requirements on controls, appropriations, and the other kinds of laws that we also have to follow. So I'm coming to you with a Payment Plus program where we have state employees who have found ways to save money for the state. I'm really proud of them and intend to keep on coming up with those kinds of ideas. That said, I would love to write them a check out of potential savings in future years, but that's also not part of the gain sharing program statute. There's all kinds of things that if we're going to make this work, we need to change or look at. And I think that's been the back and forth, unfortunately, without progress for a number of years.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. So, Commissioner, you've looked at it. You've hemmed and hawed. You've been flummoxed. You don't know what to do about it. Did you do it?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. The program hasn't, at least during my tenure, hasn't issued gain-sharing payments under the statute that's there.
Commissioner, Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. And so, Commissioner, I become flummoxed, too, as a legislator, not only when the agencies don't do what the legislature and the governor who signed on to those bills in past years don't do what they were directed to do. That is our oversight responsibility. And obviously you guys as an agency under your leadership and other leadership hasn't done what the legislature told you to do as government. For the people of Minnesota, that's rather frustrating. That's certainly not responsible government. If you're looking for responsible government, that's irresponsible government. So Commissioner, you guys in your agency and gals in your agency and agencies across state government, I become flummoxed because you guys bring all of these bills that you introduce your language. You got the executive branch trying to control their direction in the long term by sending language to the legislature. Many legislators actually sign on to those bills without even making changes themselves, which I become flummoxed over that as well. And that's the executive branch writing legislation, which I think is horrible. I think it's lazy government and lazy legislating on behalf of the legislature, and that's how I become flummoxed. But is there any evidence that your agency over the last 10 years, realizing the extent to which your agency and others do this normally, has even come forward to try to fix the gain sharing statute, the direction and law that the legislature gave your agency to implement?
Any other? Are you done, Representative Drazkowski? I'm sorry.
I am, Mr. Chair. The question is there any evidence that the agency has actually tried to get the legislature to fix it and had some ideas on how to fix it, if indeed it was so unworkable.
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that we have. I will need to double check. It's been a while. But I would be happy to go back into that. I know that we sent a letter to the committee trying to explain some of the conflicts. It's kind of like the software. There have been times in my computer where a patch comes up and all of a sudden it stops working, or that the instructions are in conflict and all of a sudden I am flummoxed because my stuff is not working. That's the situation we have here, not a willful disregard of the law. MMB is here to implement the law. The problem is, if we put this patch in, if we put this, it conflicts with other responsibilities and it doesn't make the system work. And we're trying to find some way to do that.
Representative Skowski, you've done?
Almost, Mr. Chair. Just a final comment, and thank you, Commissioner. I think certainly the questions remain among the source of the flummoxing that your department has, if that's a word, Commissioner. Whether the flummoxing is that you don't agree with the law that was brought forward and the direction, some of us really suspect and have suspicion as to whether the Democrats want government to operate efficiently and want government to get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. We haven't seen that happening. We've seen laws that have been put into place, and then suddenly the Democrats say that, we wrote a law, problem solved. Even though it really isn't. And so, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, that's the source of the flummox of Minnesotans who want their government to operate responsibly. Obviously, we have an example here where government hasn't operated responsibly once again, and the flummoxing will continue as long as Democrats are in control. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just had to find the unmute button there real quick. I would just like to draw the members' attention to Commissioner Showalter's letter. I don't know if that's been made available to all, but I know it's been made available to some on this committee. It does do a good job of describing the conflicts in greater detail that were described here today. And I think it does a nice job of why this program, the gain sharing program, is unworkable. So I think that would really get to the heart of the issue and why it's prudent in which to repeal this piece of legislation. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Claiborne, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to belabor the point either. We've already had a robust discussion about this gain sharing program, but maybe we could ask the commissioner to just talk about why this is administratively unworkable for those who maybe haven't read the letter. If you could just give a really quick, brief statement about why it's unworkable, I would appreciate that.
Commissioner Showalter, you can.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll try to make it as simple as possible. There's multiple instructions in law that control the funds and make sure that funds are accountable and transparent. That includes funds are available for a certain time period, a fiscal year, certain funds come out of certain pots, like the general fund, the federal funds, other places, and that the gain sharing program is about savings. And the timing of the savings may not occur in the fiscal year that you're currently, that appropriation is available. They may be future savings. In fact, most of the time they're going to be future savings. Or it may happen early in the fiscal biennium, which would have a dramatically different impact for this employee than it would at the later part of the biennium. So there's a number of different controls for money that are appropriate, longstanding, you would expect to see, that the gain sharing program kind of cuts across and doesn't allow us to, I think, equitably and actually logically award employees for the kind of work and improvements that are expected. We want improvements. I just want to point out again, the department and the governor's budget recommend savings and efficiencies in the Payment Plus program. We're trying to do this on a constant basis and appreciate recognizing state employees for that work. We're trying to make sure that that happens. And If that's at the core of Payment Plus, we would be fine with doing that. We'd be happy to do it, but we need to make sure it conforms to the other statutory obligations that the department and agencies have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Claiborne. The next person I have on my list here to testify is Commissioner Roberts Davis. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Is my audio okay?
Yep, we can hear you fine.
Thank you. My name is Alice Roberts Davis. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Administration. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. I want to commend the work done by the committee on House File 1952, the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill, to fund essential operations of state government. By fully funding Governor Walz's budget recommendations for the Department of Administration, you are making investments that directly impact the livelihood of Minnesotans, reimagining how and where state does work, as well as maintaining cherished public infrastructure. House File 1952 will allow the Department of Administration to ensure that the state capitol and other public spaces on the Capitol complex are well maintained, provide relief to the state parking fund, and cover a portion of projected compensation, health insurance, rent, and IT costs. The bill also funds what the future of work will look like for state government with the implementation of a comprehensive real estate strategic plan for locating state agencies in support of agency space consolidation and relocation. This bill makes strategic investments in ensuring that state dollars have the most impact by leveraging federal dollars for the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, which assists businesses to build the capacity to effectively compete for and earn local, state, and federal contracts. It also addresses Minnesota's economic and health disparities through greater equity in public grants, awards, and management. Finally, admin appreciates the inclusion of our technical policy changes. These good governance updates will better reflect our current work and correct obsolete statutes. Again, we want to thank you for your consideration and inclusion of the governor's budget recommendations. We look forward to working with you through the conference committee process.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts Davis. Members, we're going to step away from testimony for a second here. We have the majority leader, Winkler, is here with Ms. Julek to describe, talk about the House budget. And so, Representative Winkler, welcome to the committee. And Ms. Julek, welcome to the committee. Proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll have Ms. Julek go through the detail on the budget presentation in just a few minutes, but want to provide a bit of high-level context. You may, those of you who served in the State Government Finance Committee 2 years ago, you may remember that we conducted a salary study for our staff through NCSL, which examined all staff compensation in the Minnesota House in comparison with the state Senate, with state agencies, with local government, and I think even some private employers to determine whether or not we were competitive in how we were compensating staff. The results were not surprising. We were significantly below the marketplace for compensating our staff, and we engaged in a process last session to appropriate funds to allow us to catch up. During the early stages of the pandemic last summer, because of budget concerns, we suspended some of those staff salary catch-up increases. And now, having come through the last many months and having a better financial picture for the state, we are proposing a budget that would allow us to return to that planned schedule. The other significant important factor in our budget presentation today is that the legislature, the House, does not set compensation for member salaries. The Compensation Council, which is in the Constitution, created a pay increase, a salary increase for House members, and we have little choice but to pay that to members and to appropriate the funds to make it possible to pay it. Again, returning to 2 years ago, we had not seen an increase in the House appropriation adequate to pay the increased member salary. And as a result, we were eating through our budget carry forward at a rate that would have essentially bankrupted the House or forced mass layoffs in the following years. So we again face a compensation increase along with an insurance increase. Finally, the budget reflects some of the reality of safety and security needs in the state office building. I will say that it reflects some of it because based on testimony and advice from public safety professionals, Colonel Langer, our own Sergeant at Arms, the state office building is a porous building designed essentially at a time when security was not part of the consideration. And so some of the funds that may be available for a security review and some upgrades are not fundamental to our ability to keep the state office building a secure building in the state capital complex. So the budget does not reflect a full fix for that, but it does reflect the fact that we may need funds to address safety and security concerns in the state office building. So that's the broader context for this request, and I think Ms. Julek can go through the numbers.
Ms. Julek, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Barb Julek, and I'm the Minnesota House of Representatives controller in the Budget and Accounting Office. You have in your packet, I believe, a handout titled Fiscal Year 22-23 Budget Proposal Summary, dated April 5th, that was presented to the Rules Committee yesterday. I'll just be walking through that handout today. So we are proposing a House budget of $83.4 million for the 22-23 biennium. This represents a biennial increase of $3.4 million or 4.3%. Again, that is a biennium to biennium comparison. As the majority leader stated, this budget proposal would look to maintain and current staffing levels and reinstate the currently suspended salary increases for staff. It would maintain pre-pandemic trends for operating costs such as member expense payments and house non-salary operations for IT, license renewals, communications, and the such. It would request funding to account for the member salary increase that's been recommended by the Legislative Salary Council, as well as for known non-salary increases such as health insurance, and then establish a pool for additional future compensation increases for staff. This does request appropriation of $2,649,000, which is a line item on your spreadsheet. That appropriation change is a 3.4% increase over prior appropriation. Again, that is a biennium to biennium comparison. Moving on to page two of the summary, this is a detail of the general fund appropriation request. Of the $2.649 million, $540,000 would cover the member salary increase. This increase is $1,750 a year, or a 3.8% increase. Again, it is based on the Legislative Salary Council's recommendations, and it does include all associated employer payroll taxes and retirement contributions by the employer. The second item is the a 1% and 1% compensation pool, totaling $619,000. That would allow a pool available to continue to keep up, so we don't we want to make sure we're not, again, falling behind competitive positions within state and local government. And then the third bucket is the non-salary operating cost increases for $1.49 million. The grand majority of this is for increases in health insurance based on MMB projections. In addition to the appropriated funds request, we are requesting to spend $3 million of carry-forward money. Based on underspending in fiscal year 20 and underspending and estimated underspending for fiscal 21, I am estimating that there will be $3,060,000 available in carry forward funds that were not projected as part of the last biennium. So that these funds would be available July 1st as carry forward, and am recommending a spending level of that. With that level, we would retain a projected balance at the end of the 22-23 biennium of $4.4 million, which is about a target that we established 2 years ago in this process for carry-forward fund balances. That is approximately a two-month cash flow in case of a state government shutdown. And so that's kind of the target we were reaching for. So of the $3 million in carry forward, $630,000 would go for our four-year computer replacement cycle. Again, these are all one-time items that would be funded through this. We will be coming forward with a proposal to have a one-time additional deferred vacation conversion to deferred compensation of 50 hours. We have a number of staff who have accumulated vacation and will accumulate comp time this session above the maximums, and this would be a tool for them to convert those hours to deferred comp rather than lose them. There are a number of items that were approved 2 years ago for end-of-life equipment replacement that we put a halt on during the initial phases of, or the start of the pandemic, just because we didn't know where we're going to. This includes some house publication information monitoring equipment and some IT equipment backup. Moving on to the last page, we've got some known system upgrades for about $36,000. This includes an email security testing software, some network upgrades for the sergeant's office to be able to access security card information, and then some high priority house human resources and budget accounting system upgrades. That is only the high priority items. There is probably another duplicate list of equal amount not in that box. The final box establishes what's called a contingency fund. It's probably a bad word. It's more like a placeholder flexible account. In addition to this $2.1 million, I've got another $1.4 million that is not reflected in this budget based on department requests. So we've got a lot of requests for things like continuing the furniture replacement project, looking at accessibility upgrades, looking at additional system upgrades, looking at additional IT equipment replacement. But as the majority leader said, we also have a need to look at security. And so before I allocate the remaining of this $2.1 million, which is the remaining amount of the $3 million in carry forward, we want to get a analysis of what we can do in regards to our building security. What does that cost? And then a decision whether to do it or not. And so until I have that direction, I would not propose allocating to continue the furniture project or allocating to continue some of these other high priority system upgrades that are needed. So it's really, we have known needs and we have a security known need without a known dollar at this point in time. So this just reflects that. We want to look at that, decide to go forward with that, and then base additional allocations of that $2.1 million to these other continuing projects after we know the security amount. And I think, Mr. Chair, that would conclude my presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Julik. Representative Duskowski, you have a question.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I don't know if it's for the majority leader or who it is. Thank you, Ms. Julik. Thank you, Majority Leader Winkler. Mr. Majority Leader, I did serve on the Rules Committee last biennium, and I heard the presentation then by Ms. Julik and others, including a national organization. And I was persuaded that indeed we are, as you had mentioned, behind on staffing. And I do remember that pretty clearly. I'm frustrated, of course, with the salary increases of members that's dictated by a salary council that I opposed and was passed by the Democrats exclusively nearly 10 years ago now with their provision of that constitutional amendment that the voters actually, many of them now, has looked back and have buyer's remorse. But as I look at this, I'm supportive of those items because of the fact that we're constitutionally dictated to around the salary increases for members and the actual need that I am persuaded is demonstrated by that hearing that we had in your committee last biennium. The contingency funds part and the security part that you and Ms. Julik talked about and not really any details around that, I struggle with putting a slush fund together of $2.187 million without actually knowing what the need is or if there is a need. Have you thought about or can you reconsider maybe somehow dividing this proposal as it comes forward? And then also maybe Majority Leader Winkler, what form is this going to be coming forward as kind of an overarching question? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Majority Leader Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Drozdowski, for your good memory on those presentations. We did, I think, establish pretty clearly the need. I think that if you had an opportunity to review the annual report of the Capital Area Security Committee, on which I serve, as does Representative Nash, or listen to any of those testimony, or speak with Colonel Langer of the State Patrol, or Sergeant at Arms Meyerson, I think the security concerns about our building are pretty significant. And so, as Ms. And in fact, I believe the Commissioner of Administration could talk about it today. And as Ms. Julek said, we don't really yet know what the scale of what we would need to do in order to make the building secure. And I'm not talking about metal detectors at the door. We're talking about the fact that there are so many entrance points into the building. There's essentially no way of controlling access to the entire building once you are in. And it is pretty clearly the least safe building on the Capitol complex. And so it is kind of a security nightmare, and we don't know what it would take to do that differently. And so I will say that the conversation about that building has been mostly on the record, except where there have been some sensitive conversations that we have kept quiet in executive session of the Capital Area Security Committee. But as we come forward with recommendations for needs on security, it will be something that you will have an opportunity to review and ask questions about. But we just don't yet know what it is, and we know that it costs significant resources in order to even get a proper security review. The security review of the State Office Building that we have is conducted by the department or administration through a vendor, but it's done through the perspective of the owner of the building, which is the Department of Administration. It is not done from the perspective of the needs and use of the building by the tenant. So it's not from the House of Representatives outward. It is from the Department of Administration or the landlord in. And so there is significant work that has not been done. We don't know the total cost. And obviously I disagree with you that it's a slush fund for that purpose. It is something that we are very serious about diving into and figuring out real solutions for.
Representative Drozdowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Majority Leader. I don't know if we need to belabor this, but I do struggle, and it does look like a slush fund to me. We've got $2.4 billion or something in our reserve account, so we're going to have piles. The money is just – the people's money is just fluttering all over state government now, and we don't need to secure and concentrate another $2.1 million or $2.2 million in it. I don't think that's – the smart thing to get. We've got billions of dollars in reserves. So I struggle with that, with the fact that we're setting aside money for something we don't know what it is or what it needs to be in terms of amounts yet at this point. Certainly there'll be another session next year and the one the year after that. So I just ask you to reconsider that part of the proposal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, just
Majority Leader Winkler.
Just one last point, Representative Drozdowski. I don't think we're going to agree on this point, but I would say that when we have $2.4 billion in reserves and we have a very, very large amount of federal money coming in on a one-time basis, I think this budget cycle and this proposed budget is one way to make sure that our members and our staff are able to make use of this one-time money in a way that protects our security and makes, I think, the right kind of upgrades to the Minnesota House as an institution. At a moment when we can afford to do so because of this one-time money. And you may not agree, but I think this is the moment, and this part of the bill represents is making sure that the Minnesota House as an institution is able to access some of those one-time funds that are available, as you pointed out.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. Representative Nash, you had your hand up and you took it down. Do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I'm fine now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Any further questions of the Majority Leader and the budget proposal? And members, this is part of the delete all amendment for House File 1952. So it is in our budget that we're going to be voting on. Any further questions? I'm not seeing any hands jumping up. Thank you, Majority Leader Winkler. Thank you, Ms. Julek. And we'll proceed with the rest of our meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next person I had on the list was Commissioner Tomes. And I think that's unless somebody else has come forward, I think that's the last testifier we have on the bill. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Representatives. I hope my audio is okay. For the record, my name is Tarek Tomes. I am the Chief Information Officer for the State of Minnesota and the Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1952. First, I want to thank the bill author and the committee for fully funding the governor's budget recommendations related to MINUTE and recognizing the importance of implementing Blue Ribbon Council recommendations, enabling MINUTE to continue performing its important IT leadership and cybersecurity roles for the state. This fully funded investment significantly advances digital service opportunities for Minnesotans, which our agency promotes and supports alongside our state agency partners and our partners in the private sector. We also appreciate that this bill includes MINUTE's statutory cleanup provisions, as well as the changes that make the BRC IT the permanent advisory body for technology services in Minnesota. The partnership and collaboration with the members of the BRC continue to shape and inform opportunities to deliver secure, reliable technology solutions to improve the lives of all Minnesotans. Over the past year, businesses, governments, and citizens have relied on technology as a connector and a path back to our normal lives. Many companies are doubling down on their investments in IT systems and digitization of services to be able to meet those demands and to provide better value. Like many public and private organizations across the world, Minnesota government has seen how essential IT capabilities truly are. As we emerge from this pandemic, we must maintain our focus on evolving those digital capabilities to meet the needs and most importantly, the expectations of Minnesotans. Thank you again for recognizing, like the governor did in his budget recommendations, the fundamental importance of technology investments in creating an innovative digital government that works for all. And I'd also like to state for the record just how incredibly proud I am of public sector technologists, and in particular, the public sector technologists at Minnesota IT Services. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions of the Commissioner? Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, the Commissioners that testified today. With that, we'll move on to the next item on our agenda. And Representative Carlson, Vice Chair Carlson, you want to take the chair here so that I can present the bill.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Nelson. Would you like to make a motion to move House File 1952 to Ways and Means?
Chair Carlson, I'll move House File 1952 to be referred to Ways and Means.
Wonderful. And then, of course, we've got, if you would also like to move the DE2 amendment at this time.
Members, Chair Carlson, I'll move the DE2 amendment to have it before the committee. And there's a couple of amendments that we have to the DE2 amendment that we should take next.
Fantastic. Let's start then with the first amendment, which is the A1 amendment. Chair Nelson, this is your amendment. Brief background on the A1 amendment. Let's move the A1 amendment. Chair Nelson, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
And I'll move the A1 amendment to the DE2. And chair and members, this is basically a cleanup. After the DE2 was posted, we found some typographical errors. If you look on the DE2 amendment, line 1.5, there was a few zeros that were left out. And so we're correcting that. There were some numbers that were transposed and changed that we caught. Also, the sensory accessibility accommodations part, when it was going to go to the health committee, there was some change. There was going to be a change in who was going to oversee this. We're sort of doing that change here, amending that part of it to have this go to the overseen by the proper council. There was also in the vets piece that we had about for the voting piece, there was a thing that was pointed out to us by the Department of Veterans that the board of directors for the Minnesota Veterans Home is no longer in existence, and so we're deleting that part. And so I guess this is just some cleanup language for minor tweaks and that we caught after the DE2 amendment was posted.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Nelson. Just to correct the record, this is actually the A1-1 amendment. So I think best if we just make the motion to move the A1-1 amendment. Chair Nelson, if you want to restate that, please.
I'll move the A1-1 amendment to the DE2 amendment.
Wonderful. Any discussion on the A1-1 amendment? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Does this, as you call it, a syntactical correction, are there any budget changes that are going to have to be reflected as a result of this correction or not?
Chair Nelson.
No, these are in the original amendment. These are in the original spreadsheet that they just got when they were making the amendment. They just got put in incorrectly. Like I said, one line 1.5 got put in at 50,000 instead of 50 million. And like I said, there were just some zeros left out there. So it was just minor corrections that when the bill was being drafted and put together that we caught afterwards.
Representative Nash.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So to the author, you just said that there was a change of 50,000 to 50 million. Is that just in the way fiscal staff abbreviates things, or that we abbreviate things here at the Capitol, or is it truly a massive difference from 50,000 to 50 million?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Ms. Roberts, I see, is available to answer the question.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash and members, this change is to the minute cash flow provision, which is something that's been in the state government bill for several years. It allows, if I can find the language, it allows minute to have some cash flow authorization, but it all has to be repaid within the biennium. So it doesn't create new spending. And so this really was just a technical error where I dropped some zeros in the original draft.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm good.
Okay. Any further questions on the A1-1 amendment? Okay. Chair Nelson, final comments before we go to a vote on the A1-1 amendment.
Like I said, this happens a lot of time when we get the omnibus bills, when they're putting these big bills together, that mistakes get made or things get put in wrong as we're trying to get these done in a relatively short period that we had this last week. So it's just as typical of what happens normally during the budget process. If we catch these errors and we correct it with an author's amendment like this.
Very good. Members, if you could unmute yourselves, please, for the vote. All those in favor of the A1-1 amendment, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. The A1-1 amendment is approved. The next amendment we have is the A2 amendment. Representative Nash, would you like to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, you'll remember this amendment. This is, we amended this on to Representative Hewitt's bill when he brought the Gambling Control Board's bill in. This would allow for a temporary ability for groups like Legions, BFWs, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, some church organizations who have raffles to sell raffle tickets via telephone sales. So it would be with a debit card that you'd have like in a square swiper on someone's telephone. It's incredibly benign. And if you'll remember that House research, Mr. Johnson said that this does not violate any federal wire acts at all, which had been an expressed concern of the Gambling Control Board. So I appreciate in a conversation with the chair that he is willing to accept this amendment and would ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Chair Nelson to the A2 amendment.
As Representative Nash said, when we talked about this, we this passed the committee when it was in front of us and the bill was sent out from our committee. And it expires next year, June 30th, 2021. So it's only for a short term to get us through this pandemic, and it's not going to be a long term thing. And so I'll accept the amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion on the A2 amendment? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go to a vote. Members, please unmute yourselves. All those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
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 Any opposed say no. The A2 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, we're now moving to the DE2 as amended. Chair Nelson, opening comments.
We've heard the last day and a half the overview of this from Mr. Gehring and Ms. Roberts, the testimony from the departments of the state. And like I said, this is our state government finance bill and elections bill. It contains some of the election stuff that may give some people heartache, but most of the stuff that's in there is stuff that's out of the Secretary of State's administrative bill that we brought forward. And so members, like I said, this is our state government finance bill. This is what we've worked on this session. So I appreciate your vote, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Comments to the DE2 as amended? Seeing none. Okay. Representative. Okay, I'm seeing some hands now. Representative Nash and Representative Drazkowski have their hands up. Representative Nash.
I'll hold off until the final comment.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. The other hand I see up is Representative Drazkowski. Why don't you go next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question, and I don't want to encumber Ms. Roberts if she's trying to multitask with two different balls in the air right now, but maybe someone can answer it. And I was just taking a detailed look at the spreadsheet for this committee, and I don't see any current biennium reference point for us to use. Of course, we could go and ask staff separately to dig this out, but is a current biennium reference point included in any spreadsheets that we can compare this to, or am I missing something in the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair?
Okay.
I see this, Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, the committee should have posted and sent around the more detailed tracking. I didn't use it in the presentation just because of the limitations of walking through all of this information on Zoom. If you're looking for the February forecast for fiscal year 2021, so the current biennium that we're in, I can barely read it on this detailed spreadsheet, but it's $1,314,783,000. So hopefully you have that. If you don't, we can send it out again. And I would caution, if you are comparing to the 2021 numbers for state government finance, that there are some fairly large numbers, one-time spending that was done in MMB non-operating related to some COVID spending that really sort of would distort that comparison, making the 2021 numbers higher than they would be in sort of a normal biennium. But those are the numbers, and I can follow up with you afterwards if you have more detailed questions.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Ms. Roberts, if you would just pass her on to the committee, if it might be a ways down in my email and lost, and we got a flood of information right now, and some of us can find that better than others, and I think I'm among the others. So appreciate it if you could send that around. Thanks so much.
Sometimes, having a hard copy, you know, it's one of the, I'm never for more paper, but this is my printer's been getting a workout at home here too, just to kind of track everything, so I can appreciate.
Mr. Chair, Representing Eklund will always tell us that that's jobs that were in his part of the country. So,
well said, Representative Nash. You're the last hand I have up. If you want to make some closing comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
To the author.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members and Mr. Chair, I recognize that this is a bill that you have the votes for, and that it contains things that heretofore we would have made sure we had a bipartisan effort to move it out, namely the elections provisions that are in the bill. I find that troubling, and obviously the spending in here for different agencies is larger than it has been in years past, and at a time when many businesses themselves are trying to recover, they don't have a cost of living increase themselves, they can't give employees raises, they can't continue to rent various facilities and buildings, and they wake up each morning with the daunting task of finding a way to make their business survive another day. That's their reality. The reality that we see here is that state government is being bloated to grow again under the auspices, as we've heard from many constitutional officers and commissioners, that we have to have more revenue so that we can do more things for Minnesotans. Well, the reality is those Minnesotans would prefer to not be taxed to pay for this so that they themselves can do for themselves, and they don't necessarily need your help, or they would like you very much to do what you have been doing without any increases. And we've heard that earlier that if there was a cut, there would not be a cut in the budget, there would not be a cut in services delivered. We heard that earlier from a commissioner. So members, this bill, while I appreciate the amount of effort that has been expended, and I appreciate the some of the things that are in this bill, I cannot vote for this bill and would encourage my members to vote no.
Chair Nelson, closing comments before renewing your motion?
Mr. Chair and members, this is the state government finance bill. We were given a target, which basically was the target of for the increase to cover the costs of raises for our employees, the cost and raise of the operational cost of raises in the healthcare that we're going to have to pay for our employees, which that's the target we were given. And actually the target we were given was minus the increase that we have in here for the state government, or for the Minnesota House to function. The governor didn't include that in his budget request, which is why we, as we built this budget, we had to slim down some of the governor's requests, why some of the stuff wasn't moved forward as to the full amount that the governor wanted. And we tried to do this judiciously and so that we can continue to operate as a government, provide the services to our state residents so that they can live their lives and do the things they have to do and get the things from government that they expect. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File.
I'm sorry, Chair.
I'll remove my motion that the E2 amendment is amended.
Yep, and we got to go back a step. I'm sorry. I kind of jumped the gun there. We need to take the final vote on the DE2 as amended.
Yes. So I'm renewing my motion for that.
Okay. Yep, and then we'll get to the bill itself. So, members, if you could please unmute yourselves. All those in favor of the DE2 as amended, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say no.
No.
The DE2 as amended is adopted. Okay, Chair Nelson, if you could please restate the renewal of your motion to refer House File 1952 as amended to Ways and Means.
And I'll renew my motion that House File 1952 as amended be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Wonderful. That's the motion, folks. Chair Nelson renews his motion to refer House File 1952 as amended to Ways and Means. The legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Nash votes no.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Aye. Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Nay.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
No.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam?
Yet.
With a vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails.
Members, the motion does prevail. At this time, I'm going to turn the gavel back over to Chair Nelson. I know he wants to just offer a bit of gratitude to staff and members on the committee. So, Chair Nelson, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And as you said, I want to give thanks to our staff, Mr. Gehring, Ms. Roberts, for all the hard work that we did on our so-called break that we had last week. Most of the week we spent working on this, and I want to thank for the professionalism of our staff, that some of the curves that were thrown at us after we thought we had things wrapped up, that we were able to pivot and come up with ways to get this bill out and get it under target, so that we could move this out of the committee to the Ways and Means Committee. And our committee assistant, Ms. Rudolph, and the committee legislative aide, Ms. Spreck, for the hard work that they've done through the whole year and especially this last week. It was very helpful that we were able to get this bill put together. And with that, members, just so you know, because we got this done this morning, we do not have to come back this evening, and we do not have to come back tomorrow. So, members, thank you for your good work, and thank you for all your help during this committee meeting and so far this year. And we'll look forward to, we may have some meetings on other bills and other issues in the next couple of weeks, but look forward to keep an eye on your thing. That's to be determined when we'll be able to meet. And with that, members, we are adjourned for today. Thank you.